Hey, Oz.
Hey, Curtis.
What movie are we watching this week?
This week, we are going to watch the movie Marriage of Game of Death, plus Aeon Flux, the cartoon.
Love it.
And Dead Alive.
Ah, that's a good combo.
This week, we are watching Kill Bill Volume 1. Yeah, the Dead Alive for two reasons. One, they thought she was dead and she's alive. And yep. Two,
there's a lot of blood.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood. There's one person taking down an entire ballroom full of people. Yes. That leaves a lot of blood. So
is Johnny Moe like number 88 of the crazy 88, or is there the 88 plus Johnny Moe,
or is he the first of the crazy 88? Mm. Like, you know, yes. I don't know, but or is he just Johnny Moe? Everyone else is numbered, and then there's Johnny Moe.
And then there's Johnny Moe.
34, go. 72, you. So, welcome back, listener and viewers, to another week of Let's Talk About Flicks, the podcast where we take a monthly theme, wrapping up Rhyming Titles Month. It's been a fun month.
It has been a fun month. We've been all over the place.
Yeah, we really, really have. And so,
the quick recap, we started the month with Action Jackson.
Axe and Jackson's.
Then we had Be Kind Rewind, then Super Troopers, Hot Shots exclamation point last week, and finally
Kill Bill Volume 1. Yeah. So good time, good month. But yeah, we're coming to an end after this episode, and we'll reveal next month's theme at the end of the show. I'm one of your hosts, Oz.
I am the other host, Curtis.
And before we get rolling along, we do want to give a shout out to our Patreon subscribers, Don S, Aaron A, Mandy K, and Melissa L. Thank you again for your patronage.
Thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
From the top of mine. Like,
oh, just bottom of mine.
Yeah.
The bottom has the most love. It's love, true. Love is heavy, it seems.
Yeah, but it's like sedimentary love.
It seeps in around the cracks.
It's the leftover love. But there is a link to Patreon down below if you'd like to hear us talk about how much we love you. Especially next month, being February.
Yeah, being February. So, we will get to that in a moment.
This is my month. So yes. Nope, not my month.
It's your week.
It's my week. Yes. So you've got the characters, and I'm going to go take about a half hour break.
Uh-huh. While I run through the characters.
I want you to go into detail on every single one of them.
Everyone.
All 88.
Rich backstory. All 88. Number 29.
It's like
Des Moines, Iowa.
It's like a Royal Rumble.
I was brushing my teeth before we started, and I had on the 1996 Royal Rumble.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's so far it's boring. There's like nine people in. None have been eliminated.
Rumble was it? Was it 92 Rumble that Flair was like the number two or three guy in?
Yes, okay. That was 92.
Yeah, that's the one I got confused with. Sorry.
Yeah, that was a great Rumble. This one. The number one was a very, very young Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Ooh. Did he go by Hunter Hearst Helmsley?
Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Okay. He walked in. He had like a blouse on. He folded it up very neatly.
Was he a blue blood yet?
I think so. Yes. King Mabel just entered. Yeah. And actually, Yokozuna. He was like number nine, I think, just entered.
That's a lot of weight in that ring.
It is. Yokozuna and Mabel.
It's a long way for those guys to go over the top rope and all the way to the floor.
That's a long fall for Yokozuna.
Gravity.
All right, let's hit this cast of characters.
Go for it.
We've got Uma Thurman, in Kill Bill as the bride.
Right.
I don't think I'm going to say her first name in this because they don't say her first
name. They don't.
In this.
Nope. So it's on her passport, but that's the only time you see it.
So she will be the bride for this episode. And then
Does she have a code name?
She does. Yes, thank you. She is codenamed Mamba.
And that Black codename, Mamba.
Yes, Black Mamba comes from the Deadly Viper Assassination Squad, Divas, of which she was a former member. Yeah. The other Divas who had ganged up to murder her.
Murder.
We have Lucy Liu as Oren Ishii, codenamed Cottonmouth. Now the leader of the Japanese Yakuza. Mm-hmm. We have Vivica A. Fox as Vernita Green.
She should have been Black Mamba. She tells you that herself.
Yes, she tells you that. Codenamed Copperhead, who's now a mother and homemaker.
Yeah.
We have a brief appearance in this in Volume 1 from Michael Madsen as Bud, codenamed Sidewinder, who's a down on his luck at this point.
Very down.
And then we have L Driver, played by Daryl Hannah herself.
In a real resurrection role for her.
Yes. Codenamed California Mountain Snake, intentionally a handful because her character is supposed to be kind of a handful.
Yes.
And then we have the leader of the Divas, the titular Bill.
Bill.
Played by David Carradine. I guess this role was offered to lots and lots of people.
Yeah, I saw that. Burt Reynolds and...
Jack Nicholson was up for it.
Yeah.
Somebody who Quentin Tarantino wanted to cast but couldn't for scheduling reasons was Warren Beatty.
Oh, I was going to thought you were going to say Bobcat Goldthwait.
Chris Elliott as Bill.
I would love a Bobcat Goldthwait as Bill.
Bobcat as Bill. I could go for that as well. Louis Anderson as Bill.
Right. Vern Troyer as Bill.
Vern Troyer. I could see Warren Beatty in that role.
Easily.
I think he would have been. Easily. But David Carradine is great. Again, very... just a couple cameos, and you don't see his face in this one.
No.
So he's there. He's more of a presence than he is a character.
Yes. He's like a Dr. Claw of Inspector Gadget
Inspector fame. Gadget, yeah, stroking the cat.
Yeah.
We then have some other supporting characters. A couple of people who are part of Oren Ishii's, her clan of people, mm-hmm. her insiders. We have Julia Dreyfus as Sophie Fatale, Oren's right-hand person. Also a former protege of Bill, so a former student of his. We have Oren Ishii's her bodyguard, Gogo Yubari.
I love Gogo.
Chiaka Kuriyama from Battle Royale.
Yeah, Battle Royale.
Then we have somebody I mentioned before, Johnny Moe, the leader of Oren's personal army, the Crazy 88, as played by Gordon Liu.
Yeah.
Of late 70s Chinese Shaolin fame. We then have Sonny Chiba, another old school Asian martial arts film star, as Hattori Hanzo.
I love the clout that, like, not only does Tarantino like love and respect that era of filmmaking, but it's also, it seems to be mutual in that, like, I want Sonny Chiba and Gordon Liu, and there they are. The movie only had like a $30 million budget. Mm. But to be like, we'll do that for you. Yeah. Sure.
So Hattori Hanzo is running a restaurant, a sushi restaurant in Okinawa, and is also a former swordsmith. Mm-hmm. He also has an assistant, Shiro, played by Kenji Oba. We have Michael Parks as Texas Ranger Earl McGraw.
That I love Michael Parks.
Pops up in From Dusk Till Dawn, Grindhouse. Yeah.
I do. I love Michael Parks.
It's great.
And Kevin, he was really good in Kevin Smith's Tusk, too, which is not a great movie, but he was great in it.
Memorable, yes. We also have his real life son, James Parks, playing the character's son.
Son number two. Or is son, it number one or
son
two?
Son number one.
Yeah.
Edgar McGraw. We have, we got some other characters as well. We have Buck. We got some other Japanese crime bosses.
But those are the
main ones there, Oz. So quite a cast of characters, quite an acting list as well.
Oh yeah,
a compilation of performers there. So hey, Oz, what do we got for the plot of Kill Bill Volume 1?
I almost threw Pulp Fiction into my movie marriage, but it was a little too much Tarantino. But this movie does not have a sequential plot. So we start with chapter one.
Yes.
Called Two.
Two, yes. Star Wars episode four.
Right. It's chapter one called Two, which in the linear storytelling of like the chronological storytelling of all these scenes is not one nor two.
Yeah.
But the film really does open in black and white. We get the bride. I mean, it just thrusts you right into it. You have a beaten, sweaty, bloody, black and white close-up of Uma Thurman.
Half dead.
Yeah. I mean, just on life's last thread. Mm-hmm. She's getting a talking to. You know, we know it's from Bill because of the embroidered bill on his handkerchief as he's like wiping her. And she is, despite not showing him, we know that he's obviously done this to her.
Yeah.
And just on the cusp of telling him that it's his something, which we obviously, even if you don't know, you know she's talking about a baby.
Yeah.
Shoots her in the head. Cut to opening credits. Like, just in intense right out the gate.
Yes. Oh my, super intense.
Yes.
Reminding view for those who didn't catch the end of our Hot Shots episode, Oz, where and when did we see this film together?
I nabbed some pre-release tickets from Entertainment Weekly back when I lived up north, and of course you were up there too. Mm-hmm. And was it River East?
It was the theater River East
in Chicago. We went in and saw this. I think it was like a week before their premiere, and so we obviously there was, I guess, an embargo, but we weren't doing this at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was, we knew we were Tarantino fans, and we walk into this not having a clue what to expect. And that's the scene we're met with is, yeah,
this is what greeted us
is our heroine, because she's all over the posters and marketing, getting shot in the head before the opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, okay. Where's this going?
Give me that kind of movie.
It's a nice heartwarming film. Uh-huh. And then we fast forward, you know, after our opening credits, we get again, the chapter jump, as she's pulling up in front of a house, giving a nice little voiceover of we're in front of the house of Pasadena homemaker, Vernita Green, you know, again, we don't know anything about anything yet.
No, there's like little Tykes toys in the front yard.
You know, it's
this is your picturesque, just suburban home.
Yeah, and she pulls up in a bright yellow pickup truck. Yeah, with a less than appropriate name for a cat, wagon. And so it's like, okay, this is going to stand out in this neighborhood. She just goes up, knocks on the front door. You know, Vernita Green opens the door and right. Just excellent use of music and sound effects in this movie, and just kicks her backward into the house. And we have a full on battle on our hands
right here in this living room. Yeah,
it's, you know, they both have knives. They're just trash talking each other. We don't know what's going on between them outside of the fact that they want to just kill each other.
Yeah. And they're trying their best to.
Yeah, very, very much
super
so.
Super brutal fight, too. Like, putting each other through tables.
Mm-hmm. Stabbing through the tables. Yes. Like, and then a bus pulls up out front. And we see the bus pull up as they're fighting right in front of the window. And then, you know, and Vernita just kind of looks at, like, not in front of my kid.
Like, please.
You know, like, yeah. And the bride respects that. Door opens, you know, of course they're both standing there bloody, sweaty, like, you know, the daughter's like,
little girl clearly knows something's up.
Mom, what happened? And she's like, that dog of yours, you know, he messed up the living room, you know, he acted a fool. Mm-hmm. And that there's now peace. Like, the kid's home.
Yes, they momentary reprieve.
Yeah, they put their knives away and they go to the kitchen and have a conversation. Like,
yeah, have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, let's have a cup of coffee. I'm going to make my daughter a bowl of cereal. Like, it's fine. You know, and we get a little bit of their backstory about, like, hey, I know what we did to you is wrong. This is from Green. Because, of course, we saw Uma Thurman get shot in the head, but we don't know why she's here in front of this house. I know what we did to you was wrong. You know, I've owned that, you know, but again, like, that's not good enough. She reaches into the box of cereal, conveniently named Kaboom, which Everybody keeps a handgun in their cereal box.
That's the toy at the bottom.
Right. You pull.
I only got finger traps when I open up. When I dug in my Fruit Loops,
I got one of those like Flippy Frogs that you pull it back to. But pulls the cereal box on her. It takes a shot. Well, Uma Thurman throws a knife at her and kills her.
Yeah.
Like gets her right in the chest. Boom.
Yeah, the shot misses, and it's just bang, throw, done.
Dead.
Yeah.
So Vernita Green is dead. Uma Thurman, you know, the bride, the daughters watched all this. Of course, there was a gunshot in the house. Of course, she's going to respond. She just tells them, like, hey, if you ever want to seek revenge, let me know.
I get it. I'll be there waiting.
And Nikki saw all of this. That's the end of chapter one. Like, you know, go to chapter two, which jumps back. Mm-hmm. To Uma Thurman being in the hospital.
Yes.
The
blood splattered bride.
The blood splattered bride. Actually jumps all the way back to Sheriff McGraw pulling up to the scene of the massacre at Two Pines Wedding Chapel.
Son number one.
Right. You know, they're looking at everything. I mean, just blood everywhere.
Carnage. Absolutely.
It's a massacre. So they're crouched down over the bride and, you know, kind of talking about, you know, it's pity that, you know, as pretty as she was, and she's still alive as she spits blood all over his face. Mm-hmm. Just as a reflex.
Reflex, yeah.
And so we cut to her in the hospital. She's comatose. We see Daryl Hannah as L Driver with just a awesome Bernard Herrmann whistling piece. Escaping the name of me, what it's called, it doesn't matter. But she's dressed as a candy striper, like not even remotely believable as what a nurse would look like.
It's kind of a take on like a 40s 50s era.
Absolutely.
But sort of, but not really.
I love the eye patch with the red cross on it.
Yeah, that was such a great touch.
But she's coming. She's basically, I'm here, Bill, and I'm going to inject her IV and kill her. Mm-hmm. She's been sent to do that. Just as she's about to, her phone rings, and it's Bill. Mm-hmm. We owe her more than that. You know, back off. Of course, L just loses it on him.
Yeah, you just hear, like you cut to like Bill's perspective.
Yeah.
And you just hear her just scream.
Yeah, it's like what Schwartz's mom was screaming when Ralphie's mom called.
What?
Exactly. That's what L Driver's screaming at Bill like.
Daryl Hannah also had a bar of soap in her mouth at the same time as well.
Yeah, she said fudge a few times.
We should have used Light Boy.
And so we cut, you know, basically Bill's like, we can't, we not in this state. Yeah. Like, we owe her more than that. 4 years later, after being shot in the head, she wakes up from her coma. And
yeah, it's like a mosquito bite. She just jumps up, basically. Yeah.
Immediately reaches down and feels that she's no longer pregnant.
It was such a harrowing.
Yes.
Oh, God. Just sad and just awful scene. It's like you just feel her emotion because that's her initial reaction. After she takes just a quick second to orient herself, you know, she reaches her, she touches her belly and upon the realization that she's lost her child.
Yeah. Oh, it was
devastating.
Hard. Yeah.
Devastating.
And then to top it off, like, let's leave the camera on her. Like, kudos to you, Uma Thurman, to, you know, just carry that emotion and that weight. It doesn't last long though, because she hears somebody coming. Mm-hmm. So she goes back, fakes being in a coma. Turns out if we didn't think it could get worse, it's employee of the month, Buck, who basically has been selling her comatose body to people to come have intercourse with.
Yep. Pretty rough sequence here.
Yes. It's very disgusting, including a very disgusting bottle of Vaseline that he tosses. Mm-hmm. It's just gross.
And the guy and the guy playing the
truck driver.
Yeah, the truck driver is one of those guys from Adam Sandler.
Yeah, he's one of Adam Sandler's stable guys. Well, it's gross. Ugh. So he climbs on top to do what he came to do, and of course meets an assassin that just woke up. He's dead.
It cuts like the orderly is left.
Yeah, Buck's
and
gone.
And it cuts just for a split second, and she has bitten
lip. It's like
stretched it like 6-8 inches down.
It's like Plastic Man.
And you don't see how he dies, but like, it just cuts. He's on the ground, and there's just blood everywhere.
Yeah, he's just dead. She goes to hop up out of bed. Of course,
instinctively, yeah.
She's had no time to process what's, like, even what kind of physical state she's in.
But she has no idea how long she's been there.
That's what I mean. Yeah, like, she's completely atrophied, falls to the floor, but still has enough to get out of the way as Buck, who heard the yelling from the truck driver, he just came to check on her, because it was like, you have like 20 minutes or something like that. He comes back, sees him dead, sees her gone. Well, she's got a little penknife or whatever, slices his Achilles, drops him. Of course, she thinks he's in on it. Mm-hmm. So she she drags him over to the door, starts just slamming the door on his head. And even like this actor, just, I mean, the way he's flopping around, because it's like, oh my gosh, just pain.
Yeah.
Comes to discover, Buck does nothing to do with Bill. She kills him anyway. Rightfully so. Takes his keys, gets up in a wheelchair, just wheels herself out. She finds a truck that matches the keychain.
it's easy to pick out of the crowd, yeah.
And crawls into the back seat, and basically we get a Tarantino foot fetish shot. As she's trying to will the paralysis away.
Yeah.
It spends like 13 hours getting herself back to functioning. Mm-hmm. And then gets in the truck and drives off. Well, of course, we've seen that truck already. So we just got introduced to a truck we've already seen. So
now you're kind of realizing, this happened before the Vernita Green.
Which we kind of knew that anyway when she was in a coma, but still this is all backwards. That's the end of chapter two. Chapter three, the origin of Oren, which is completely animated. We get a little bit more just voiceover as we meet Oren. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this section. Sure.
Again, very brutal, very rough watch.
Very brutal. Yeah. It's like even animated, it was brutal to watch.
Yeah. And it's done in anime style
as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
With your hyper violence, your highly stylized, animation.
Very much so. You know, paint or the blood is painted on. Uh-huh. You know, it did really remind me of that Aeon Flux. The style of animation. As a child, Oren witnessed her parents being murdered by a Yakuza leader, Boss Matsumoto. That's right. She waits 11 years, and then at 11 years old, after basically training, discovers that Matsumoto enjoys the company of young women as she's at 11 years old, uses that to her advantage to get in with Matsumoto. Mm-hmm. Kills him and then works her way up the chain as an assassin. We see a lot of what she's been doing, in all this anime style, and it's extremely well done.
I love that little sequence of her on the rooftop assassinating some foreign dignitary.
And we watch it from the bullet's perspective.
Yeah, as it carves through the guy's head and brains.
Yeah, and then like the two groupies that are with you. Yeah.
It's like the bullet hole's perspective.
Yeah. They like both dip in and look at the hole and scream. It's just very well done. And so that's what we get. And then we cut back to the bride as she finally regains the wiggle in her toe. Like, it's like, instead of watching her try to get rid of the paralysis, we get the Oren backstory. Yeah. So, she takes off, and we go to chapter four, The Man from Okinawa. Mm-hmm. This is my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah. It's a great character work. And
yes.
Yeah, I love the sequence in the restaurant. It's yeah, so well played. Yeah. It's so well
exactly.
You know, like choreographed.
I mean, the just way that they, so, they it's just so yeah. well acted too. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's such a minimalist set, and there really isn't a lot of camera movement. It's a lot of just set the camera up and go.
Yeah, just let them work within the frame.
Right, and just I really like. I think this is the best acting Uma Thurman's done in the movie. Was yeah. this just bright and cheery? You know, I'm just this tourist and...
Yeah, yeah, like she puts on a character.
Very much so.
To kind of feel out the scene, because yeah. it's... The sushi restaurant yeah. is run by a famous swordsman, yeah. Tori Hanzo, who...
A famous retired swordsman.
Yes, yeah, who obviously is not, you know, advertising his right. his past work.
Yeah, so she, like you said, she pops into the sushi bar, you know... Just plays it up
as you said, like kind of like ditzy blonde,
yeah,
like kind of California,
yeah. I'm
you know, tourist.
Yeah. What are you doing?
What are you doing here? I took the 405
to Encino,
not playing the California, just playing a California
Stuart. Oh, very good. I don't think Sonny Chiba could have kept up with that.
Yeah, Fred Armisen was there, Chris right. Wig was there, Keith Richards was there.
And so, yeah, she pops in and, you know, she's playing it up and she's practicing her Japanese and she's getting complimented on it or whatever. And, you know, she finally, once she realizes that she's in a safe zone, kind of she takes off her mask mm-hmm. figuratively yeah. he doesn't see it coming and she's like, you know, I'm here to talk to Hattori Hanzo.
Yeah,
and he just, I mean,
like almost he drops a glass.
Yeah, it's almost like he's been in like witness protection and just got found.
Yeah, like his cover got blown.
Yeah,
like PTSD, like,
very much so.
Yeah, I need Japanese steel.
Yeah, that's what she says. And so they go upstairs. She kind of gives him a little bit of information, but basically it's like, hey, because he's like, I don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
These are all just monument.
These are instruments of
yeah.
death.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't do that anymore. I just keep these for posterity. Like, no. And she's like, you know, I'm hunting rats. You know, and he's like, and she's like, she writes Bill on the, like the foggy window.
Well, she tells him it's one of his former students.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
he kind of figures it out.
And then, yeah. Oh yeah. He wrote it. She didn't write it. He wrote it. And he's like, give me a month. You know, like that's all you had to say.
Yeah.
Is Bill,
so, you know, and you like, you don't need his backstory on
no,
that.
You just no, know,
you realize how guilty he feels,
yeah.
how responsible he feels for this monster that he's sort of unleashed on the world.
Yeah. And so he's like, okay, give me a month, you know, come back in 30 days. That's the end of chapter 4.
Yeah.
And then we head to the longest chapter of the movie, chapter 5, the showdown at House of Blue Leaves.
What a sequence.
Oh my God. It's like to go from that soft, almost romantic chapter 4.
I mean, shot in like soft focus.
Yeah. And even the score behind it was just very nurturing. Like it yes. really was this blossoming scene for her. Because in the ins and outs of it, you know, we do see she's made a kill list. Mm-hmm. And Oren was at the top. And so while we saw Vernita Green, who was number 2, get killed first, we are now at the part of her story where she's still working up to do this.
Yeah.
She's not fully back to her, you know, assassin revenge self yet. So the bride heads to Tokyo. You know, we meet Oren Ishii. We get some more backstory on how she's overtaken the Yakuza. They all respect her except for one guy.
We see her at a meeting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, with the heads yeah. of all of the Yakuza. Yeah, right.
And one of them is very not okay with as the RZA would say, a half Chinese, half Japanese, half American.
Yeah. 150% of them.
The math doesn't add up, but whatever.
Just go.
But he's not okay with a non-full-blood Japanese person. Yeah. Not only that, but a woman running the Yakuza. And calls her out for it. And so she just goes and takes his head.
Yeah.
Like, lobs her right off.
Hops up on the table.
Right.
Just boom. And blood flows.
Oh, yeah.
Just
moment.
Like, just like geyser.
Yes. Like, and not even immediately, which is great. She cuts it off, holds her pose, and then whoosh.
Yeah. I love the excess in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Very
like,
much so.
Like, it's one of those where it's almost like an art that they're doing.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
Like, it's supposed to be over the top.
Yeah, it's like, it's
supposed to be hyper real.
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort to do it this intense, this well. Yeah. Which, again, to give credit to Peter Jackson and Dead Alive, kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
It's not hard to throw a bunch of blood at the screen, but it's hard to do it well.
Yeah.
And they did it well. So, yeah, Oren and her army have, they've come into this bar, basically. And they're doing their thing. Like, she's... everything about this scene is cool. Like, yeah. Everything about this chapter, you know, the, like you said, the soundtrack, the, you know, the, just the Bruce Lee outfit on Uma Thurman, like, yeah. top to bottom, it's just so well choreographed.
The yellow motorcycle, that yellow crotch rocket.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, where'd you get it? You don't have a job.
The budget rental had it.
I want something real compact.
She got it from the Tokyo airport budget rental.
Avis. And so she shows up at this same kind of bar, I guess they're at.
Well, she tailed Sophie.
Yeah. That's right. Tailed Sophie. Pulls up right next to her. Tailed Sophie goes to this bar. Oren and her crew, they're just having a good old time. You know, she really is. She's smiling, laughing, or whatever. You know, Gogo's there and Johnny Moe's there. Like, it's just a fun time.
Yeah.
She thinks she hears something outside, which, of course, she does, because the bride is standing right outside the door. Mm-hmm. Whips this penknife of sorts. Of course, doesn't hit her. Tells Gogo to check it out. And the bride is like, somehow gotten herself up into the rafters. It's like holding herself up there.
Yeah.
It's just so, like, again, extreme, but whatever. Like, we're already there in this movie.
You may as well lean into it.
Yeah, so go for it. You know, nothing to be seen. And then Sophie goes to the bath. Well, the bride goes to the bathroom to kind of change out of her biker suit into the same suit, but just not a biker suit.
Yeah. The end of the Bruce Lee Game of Death suit. Yeah.
And then Sophie goes to the bathroom and she catches Sophie's ringtone and recognizes that ringtone from when she was being massacred.
Uh-huh.
It's like Sophie took a phone call during this like massacre at her wedding. And so recognizes that. Well, that's her in. So takes Sophie, goes out onto this giant dance floor, basically, and just yells for Oren.
I love that scene. It's just it's like a profile shot of the bride's mouth, just in this like deep commanding voice. Oren Ishii, just calls her out,
and while hiding behind Sophie, like to where
at sword point.
Oren knows exactly who it is, like
immediately.
So she steps up behind Sophie, just lops her arm off.
Clean off.
And
she wails. Oh, my goodness. I don't know what kind of acting talent it takes for somebody to act out having your arm lopped off.
They really cut it off.
Tip of the cap to Julie Dreyfus.
Yeah. No, they really cut it off.
She sold that.
And this is where the fight ensues. Like, you know, the bride is like, essentially, let's go. To which Oren's like, okay, let's go.
She's got about a half a dozen.
Yeah, she doesn't have the full 88.
Yeah, so there's like six or so. She sends one person down.
Yeah,
and the bride just
it doesn't make a dent.
Immediately just cuts the guy's sword off and then runs him through with her sword and lifts the guy over her head
at sword point.
Yeah,
but she sends two more down. They barely make it to the bottom of the stairs before she's got these two chopped down. And so she's, you know, essentially wiped them all out. And then she sends Gogo down. Mm-hmm. And Gogo, just cute little Japanese schoolgirl, like leaning
that's
into
bit.
It.
Yeah, that's the bit.
Hi. And she's got like a morning star with her. And she puts up a fight. And even the bride is like, Gogo, I know you feel you have to protect her, but walk away. Like,
I beg you to walk away.
And you call that begging? Like, Gogo's like, we're not messing around. Mm-hmm. And really gave her arguably the strongest fight anybody had given her in the movie. Because she was healthy.
Yeah. Like, yes. I remember the first time we watched this and like this particular, you know, little, you know, fight scene within the bigger fight scene.
Yeah.
So brutal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially the scene, it's towards the end where Gogo gets the chain wrapped around
her neck.
And you, and I don't know how they did it with makeup and whatnot, but Uma Thurman's eyes are just bloodshot.
Yeah, just
red.
Yeah, she's about to die.
Yes.
Like, she's asphyxiating right there on screen.
Yeah.
But they had broken a few tables and their table hopping dancing they've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was basically a table leg with nails on it and drove it into the side of Gogo's head, killing Gogo, which
I love how when Gogo falls over, that table leg with the nails is like sticking up in the air out of her head.
Right. Yeah. It's just that attention to detail is like, man, like even falling down a dead body, that was brutal. But like, if it weren't for that, she probably would have killed her.
Yeah,
like that would have been the end of the bride.
Away.
Yeah,
it would have had to redo that sequence with Vernita Green.
It's a really changed the beginning of the movie. Bride. What are you doing here?
What are you doing?
And so, but now we've got the bride she's battered at this point. She's been cut. She's been beaten. And it's just her and Oren, and then we hear motors.
Whole lot of motorcycles pulling up.
And it was fun because it's almost like the bride was like, you know, she even says she, you know, like Oren goes, you didn't think it'd be that easy, did you? You know, well, as a matter of fact,
for a second there
I did, you know, and it's almost like, okay, like let's keep going. And like the other 82 show up.
Yeah. The other 80, the surviving 82 members of the crazy 88.
And they all come in and they all circle around her and the music drops a beat or seven and we get a little bit of one at a time fighting, but not really too much. They did a pretty decent job of keeping the bride on a swivel.
Yeah.
Like she's fighting from all angles.
When she's using her sword, like the reflection from the sword
to see
her.
Behind her. Yeah. Johnny Moe's like right behind her. It's like, it was like, oh man. And so she's going to town on these people. The music changes to Nobody by the Human Beings. And
that's great.
Oh yeah.
The music in the sequence is so amazing.
And it's like, there's absolutely no reason why it should work, you know, but it works. Like,
It's graphically violent.
Oh yeah,
violent
enough that she plucked a dude's eye out, and then the scene went black and white. Otherwise, it would have been just red.
Yeah, like, it was the only way they could get it past the
censors
to keep an R rating.
Yeah,
they had to go to black.
So much blood. She's cutting limbs off left and right. Cuts
a dude in half.
Just splits him like Conan the Librarian.
He also didn't know.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't think he knew. Those books were late. At one point, looks up and Oren just walks away like she's bored. Yeah. Like, almost like she's bored and she's not even concerned anymore. Like, there's no way she could take all these people out. She gets a pretty good fight out of Johnny Moe. We defy physics a lot. Like, you know, whatever. And it ends up in the room, like almost like the tea room that Oren was in. Mm-hmm. They turn the lights off and it's just another just silhouette fight. Yeah. Against the blue light. Such a cool scene.
Yeah, with some great music from the RZA score going in the background.
Yeah, for sure. Gets it down to her. She's down to just one of the 88 left. Mm-hmm. The lights kick on, and it's just a kid.
Yeah.
And she doesn't kill him. She just spanks him.
He was the 88th member.
Yeah, exactly. He's new.
They go in age order.
But she just basically yells at him and spanks him and sends him home.
Yeah, like with the flat of the sword.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like she doesn't hurt him. Mm-hmm. Kind of steps out, you know, and tells everybody that's still living but rolling around limbless, yes, almost like, you guys get out of here.
Yeah. You get to keep your lives, but I keep your limbs.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Except for you, Sophie.
Yes.
Yeah. You stay right there. Then she goes out back to find Oren.
In this very tranquil, peaceful.
You know,
like a dusting of snow covered. Mm-hmm.
I love that sound effect of the water pump.
Yes, yes. I actually just had that
like
in my notes
just
as well.
That like that hollow bamboo. Yeah. It's just so peaceful.
Yeah,
and it really is a peaceful fight between these two.
Well, and it juxtaposes. The brutality with this peaceful setting.
They face off. I mean, they go tit for tat, you know, mm-hmm. one cuts one cuts the other. Yeah. Obviously the bride gets the upper hand. It slices. Well, she tells her, it was kind of fun. She goes out there and pulls her sword and she's like, you know, almost again, because they have a relationship.
Yeah. They know each other. They're not unfamiliar.
Yeah. Just like the bride and Vernita did at the beginning of the movie. Like we saw the brutality, but then they actually had a conversation because
they were co-workers, teammates for many years.
And so, you know, she's like, you know, basically, where'd you get your sword? It's Hattori Hanzo. And she's like, you lie. Like, no way. And so she shows her the logo and she's just like instant jealousy. Like, you know, I thought that's not fair. You have one and I don't. They fight it out. The bride ends up like basically scalping her, you know, just with a clean swipe. Just slices the brain pan right off the top of her head.
Like literally scalps her. You see her scalp just sort of tumble in the air.
Fall into the snow. And then her last lines are like, what's a Hattori Hanzo sword? Like only Hattori Hanzo can do that. And then we get kind of the prologue or the epilogue of she grabs Sophie, takes her with her, shoves her in the trunk because it can't be a Tarantino movie without a trunk shot.
Somebody getting shoved in a trunk.
Which is brutal. Like, pulls up at the top of a hill by a hospital and just chucks her. Like, just throws her down the hill. She's limbless, by the way. She has no arm. Just throws her down. She rolls to a stop at the hospital, like ER. And then we catch the end of Sophie's being not interrogated by Bill, but basically I had to tell her, you know, and the bride is like, I want him to know that I know, mm-hmm. I want him to know that I know he knows, you know, whatever.
And she also got the location of the other divas as well.
And so, you know, and Bill ends with, does she know the kid's still alive?
And roll credits.
Cut to credits. And then we're like, well, now I gotta watch the second one, you know.
Ooh, and what a movie, Oz.
Yeah. It was a long-winded summary, but it was worth it.
Yeah. A great movie, great plot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a great movie.
So hey, folks, at this point in the show, Oz and I each give our own unique ratings to the film in question. 2003's. That's right. Oh, three, right?
I think so.
2003's. Yeah. Kill Bill Volume Un. Hey, Oz, how would you rate this flick?
It's an easy low-hanging fruit, but I'm going to give this one a crazy 88. Sorry. It deserves 100, but yes, I'm just going to give it an 88.
Crazy 88 is a mathematical term that equals 100.
It's true. Yeah. I'm a math minor, and I didn't know that, but it's true. It's upper level.
Yeah, it's there. Yeah. It's, Yeah, your four function calculators can't do it, but you know, get a Texas Instrument.
You turn your iPhone sideways and it unveils the crazy keyboard. So
it's there. Just
crazy 88. What are you rating it?
My rating is I'm giving it all of the Hanzo swords.
All the Hanzo swords. Very nice.
Mm-hmm. Hey, next up, folks, we got Outside Insights. Oz and I have been scouring the interwebs, searching for unprofessional reviews that tickle our funny bones, and we hope they tickle yours as well. Oz, what's your Outside Insight for Kill Bill?
My Outside Insight comes from Skirt. It was just left a couple of weeks ago. Says, tell me this is satire, I beg. Stupidest film I've ever seen. You have to despise women to make something like this. Tarantino is literally 15 years old.
Literally.
People seem to think this is empowering. It's literally his own custom-made pornography, complete with feet, Japanese schoolgirl, coma rape, etc., etc., etc. And it's just dull.
Yeah, if there's one word I could use to describe this movie, it's dull.
Half a star.
Oof.
Because he's literally 15 years old when he made this.
Literally 15 years old.
Yeah, which makes Tarantino in his mid-30s now. He looks older than that.
That really makes Reservoir Dogs a bigger accomplishment then.
Great job. It's like literally a show-and-tell film.
He was like 6 years old when he made Reservoir Dogs.
Good job, Quentin. So, but he had connections as a six-year-old.
He knew Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, Tim Roth. And, so yeah, that's my half-star review from Skirt.
Skirt.
Oh, what do you got?
I'm gonna throw two at you there, Oz. They're both from the Internet Movie Database. The first is a 1 out of 10 left by Fubard in July of 2005.
Okay.
How can anyone give this rating above a rating above three is totally beyond me. If I were Uma or Lucy or any of the other actors, I would be embarrassed to see my name in the credits. If you want to see a good film of this nature, see Peter Jackson's Dead Alive or Sam Raimi's Evil Dead.
Hey, Dead Alive.
Yeah. You plucked it right out of your movie marriage.
Yeah, just like you plucked that eyeball out.
There's one more sentence I'm going to say for this one.
Yeah.
The chances of my seeing part two after this are zero to none. I never quite understood that phrase.
No, might me either. Zero to none.
It's not a scale if it's zero to zero.
Right, yeah. And zero and none are the same.
Yes. So it's just, you could just say one or the other. That's fine.
Zero to none.
Oh, zero Lord. To none. The other one I'm going to share with you is left also for the Internet New Movie Days is a 10 out of 10. It's the opposite end of the spectrum.
Ooh.
This is left by Bevo in June of 2020. It's just a one sentence review. I like how she wears a yellow tracksuit and chops people with her sword. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
I like that.
Yellow tracksuit, chop, chop, chop.
I only really saw the third act, but I liked it.
Yeah, it was great. Checked every box I like in movies. Right.
I like yellow.
I like swords.
I like Charlie Brown.
All right, hey folks, it's that point in the show you've all been waiting for, our signature segment, the 3-2-1, in which Oz and I each share three goods, two bads, and one huh about the film we've been yapping about, Kill Bill Volume 1. Oz, what are your three goods?
My first good, I purposely left this out because I wanted to talk about it here. When the bride gets, well, no, not the bride. Eh, yes and no. When Oren's crew gets to the bar, there is an extremely long one shot.
Yep.
And it is so well done, not only visually, but the focus of the actors to pull off something that long, to hit every beat they have to hit, both background characters and focused foreground characters. It's just a testament of just excellent filmmaking. And so that's my first good, is that
it was kind of like his nod to, you know, like the classic Goodfellas shots.
Yes.
Boogie Nights has a similar one in the beginning.
Yeah. It's just good on that. I just really enjoyed that. I mentioned it earlier and I'll say it again. I really liked that that Hattori Hanzo chapter 4 man from Okinawa.
Yeah.
Just that whole in that whole scene was just it's just tender.
It's a much different vibe than the rest of the movie, but it still fits.
Right. And so I really like that. And my third is just the soundtrack was excellent.
Yeah. You can't beat the soundtrack.
With the exception of the score, like every musical piece in this movie came from another movie. And so it's like, man, there's been some great music in some unknown films. And Tarantino, of course, has seen them all because it's Tarantino. He's seen everything. So those are my three goods. What do you got?
Oh, my three goods. I'm going to start with Oz. This movie has one of my favorite things. It has miniatures.
Miniatures. Tokyo.
The sequence where she's on the plane flying into Tokyo. It's a miniature skyline. It's a miniature plane. There's a little miniature street with miniature cars moving. I love miniatures.
It's fun.
And this movie, it's supposed to be a little aware that it's a miniature because this movie lives in hyper realism.
Right.
So like it's just real enough, but then goes beyond
it. Like any of the air travel scenes, like whenever they would cut to like the profile shot of the plane in the air, like no one was thinking you were really watching a plane fly.
Yeah.
But it's like whatever.
As the plane approaches, it flies like directly over Tokyo, like between buildings.
Yeah, we're just gonna land right here.
Yeah. I'll also kind of tack onto this, like just some of the other plane stuff, like she's on the plane, and like her sword is in the seat next to her.
Yeah,
like she just walks it through the airport. Like
right, it's fine. It's mine. It's okay. Yeah. They're all probably like, oh, that's a Hanzo sword. It's fine.
Yeah, it's Hanzo. Yeah, she got it at the airport Annie Ann's.
Well, yeah, it was free. Well, I think she had enough punches on her card that she got a free sheave.
She went to the Hudson News to pick up a USA Today.
right.
And that sword was there, too.
Yeah.
So that's my first good. My second good, let's go with just Uma Thurman and Zoe Bell both. I feel like you have to also include Zoe Bell.
Absolutely.
Who is Uma Thurman's stunt double in this movie, who went on to have a lead role in Tarantino's half the Death Proof.
Grindhouse. Yeah. Yeah, the second half of that movie. Yeah.
Yes. But they both play this character. And, Uma, as you said before, I agree, I think is arguably the best acting of her career. And Zoe Bell, oh my goodness, I don't know how in the world she does some of the stuff.
I read in the trivia that even in that Hattori Hanzo scene where he throws the baseball at her and it gets sliced, Zoe Bell literally cut the baseball in half with a sword.
And he had to be 15 feet away from her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Throwing a two-seam fastball at her.
Good for, I don't know if Sonny Chiba's got heat, but still.
It's 15 feet away.
It's 15 feet away.
Yeah. So good. A lot of reaction time there.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah, so that's my second. And my last, Oz, this is just a super subtle thing. And I think you and I both noticed this the first time we saw it. Right at the beginning. So we're past the initial El Paso scene, and we're in Vernita's house. And they're in the middle of this fight. And the bride ends up behind Vernita's couch, and Vernita runs into a different room, and the bride goes after her and jumps over a couch, and you just hear this little whoosh sound.
Oh yeah,
she jumps over, and I think that moment when you heard this like this unnecessary sound effect,
right?
Just to up like the hyper real action.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of when you and I looked at each other in the theater and like, all right, we are in for a ride.
Yeah, this is gonna be fun. Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, especially after that opening brutal scene of watching a woman get shot in the head.
Yes.
After she's attempting to announce that she's pregnant. Like, and then it's like, just kidding. We've got a little Scott Pilgrim to go with it.
So, yeah, my third good is unnecessary whoosh sound.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. Hey, Oz, what are your two bads?
I mentioned it a little bit last week at the end, and I talked about that just there's times where the dialogue in this movie is just a little too cute.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it is what it is. It doesn't spoil anything, but there's just sometimes it's like the silly rabbit tricks for kids thing. It was like, oh god, like it just, I don't know. It's like it just got a little cute at times.
Sure.
And my second is just gross medical professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah, that orderly is disgusting, and he deserved every knock to the head that he got. Plus more.
I concur.
Yeah, yep. that's my second bad. It's gross.
Yeah, it's very gross.
What are your bads?
I'm actually going to build off that and just and kind of take it to another step. As much as I enjoy this movie, was that necessary? That
no.
The Buck scene. Like, it's kind of almost like, has she not suffered enough?
Right.
Like, it's trauma on trauma on trauma, and yeah. It didn't really add much to,
no.
to the story. It was just another way that you can abuse the bride.
I get it, because she wasn't aware of all of that extra trauma. So it was traumatic to us, and not, I mean, she's finding out as we're finding out.
Yeah.
But you're right. It wasn't necessary.
Yeah. Like, I think there was a way you could have done that. Like, if you still wanted to have like a gross orderly, I think there's a way to do that without literally, you know, having it exposed that her character has been repeatedly raped.
Yeah.
Because in the course of 4 years.
Like, I understand that you have to establish Buck as a bad person to justify our hero killing him and taking his truck.
Yeah.
Because if she would have just woken up and killed Buck, and Buck didn't show any sort of reason to deserve it, well, then it's hard for us to side with her when she's just killing for killing's sake.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. There could have, I don't know what that better way would have been.
I thought it was just too, it was too mean. It was too cruel.
Yeah.
Like, it was just too much.
It just felt like Tarantino saying, look what I did. Like
it. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Look how mean I can be.
Yeah.
So
that's my first one. Uh-huh. I just thought that whole sequence was unnecessary. Could have been done in a different way. And the other one, my other bad is just seeing Harvey Weinstein's name in the credits.
Yeah, it's gross.
Speaking of gross.
Yeah. Yeah. For all we know, it was his idea.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I know. God. I got an idea what you can do here, Quentin.
Hey, listen up, Q.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's disgusting.
And, yes.
Yeah. So that's my, a lot of gross in our bads. Mm-hmm. So that's my two bads. Hey, Oz, what's your huh?
You kind of foreshadowed it a little bit, which is fine, but why was the bride allowed to carry her sword on the plane?
she bought a ticket for it.
I guess, because it's just, it's right here. I get, who knows, I guess it's Japanese Airlines, so.
it's her emotional companion sword.
Exactly. It's my support sword. Like, it's got a little orange vest on it. you can't deny me, so that's my huh. Why was she allowed to carry a sword on the plane?
That's a good huh.
What's your huh?
I'm gonna start with a preview huh. You know, when the bride, you know, you mentioned before, when she's leaving the hospital, she wheelchairs herself out to Buck's truck,
uh-huh.
and she gets in, and then she goes to leave, and the wheelchair's gone. I get this is just probably one of those simple movie goofs that you see.
It's been 13 hours.
Maybe it just rolled away. Who knows?
Like someone on the next shift clearly was like, oh, well, I don't know why this is here. It's like when you find a shopping cart just randomly somewhere. Like, do you really push the shopping cart 7 blocks from Walmart? Like,
yeah.
You just return it just because you're supposed to.
My real huh. Is this movie is you know, it features Tarantino's longtime editor Sally Menke.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to have that exact same last name.
Sally Menke. Curtis Sally Menke.
Yeah, Curtis Sally. Yeah, Sallymenke. Yeah. It's all one.
It's all Salamanke.
Salamanke.
Yeah. It's Guatemalan.
to my record, and there's not a whole lot of Menkes out there. It's not a super common last name.
Right.
To my knowledge, I don't have an Aunt Sally. I don't know of any direct relation, but every time I see Sally Menke's name in credits, I just call her Aunt Sally. I feel like she and I have that connection. So my huh is, how come I've never met Sally Menke? And I know she's passed on.
She's passed on.
She has passed on, but I wish I knew Sally Menke. I wish I knew Aunt Sally.
It just even to like ancestry.com it to see if you guys cross somewhere and be like, oh, that's cool.
I mean, by the transitive property, that means that I could also be a skilled editor for Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Aunt Sally taught me everything she knew.
Right. Before she passed, she gave it all to me.
Yeah.
You just pat whatever notebook's nearby, and it's right here. All right here in the notebook.
Right, it's there.
So, thanks, Aunt Sally.
Rest in power, Aunt Sally.
And if that doesn't work, you can always go try to be an editor in the View Askew universe.
So, hey, that's my that's a wrap on Kill Bill Volume 1. And yeah. Oz, that's a wrap on this month on rhyming titles. We've done it. This was a five-weeker.
We made it. Something that's been in the cooking for a while. We finally got rhyming
We've
titles.
We've really
done.
Been looking forward to that Woo. Month, and we did it.
We got a lot of good months coming up, too.
We do.
What do we got for next month?
Well, next month, Oz, is February at the time of this recording.
If you're a fan of the show.
Yes. All of our longtime fans will know what's coming next.
All four of you. One of them's got an inside scoop.
Yes. So February, the month of love.
Yeah, that's right.
To celebrate the month of love, we turn things over to our wives.
Yeah, my wife.
You say that. There's a great, you know, I'm a huge Bob's Burgers fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And there's an episode where Bob is, he's imagining himself working at an office, just like a typical corporate office.
Okay.
And he's standing around the break room. They're eating cake because it was someone's birthday, and he goes, hey, so-and-so, hey, my wife, Borat.
That's what you do in corporate America.
That's what you do. You stand in the break room, eat cake, and go, my wife. Oh, that's Borat.
Ooh.
New movie reference.
We're friends.
So February, this coming month, is Wives' Choice Month, where Oz and I lean into our betrothed and ask them to contribute a couple of movies for us to cover.
This is Wives' Choice Month Part 3.
It is the third time we've done this, third annual Wives' Choice Month.
Yeah.
In the past, I just brought up our list. In the past, such winners that we featured have included Dracula. That was the Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
The Bodyguard.
That's my bodyguard.
Secretary, Legends of the Fall, featuring Pete Meat Bradley.
It was just a bonkers movie.
Oh, just all over the place.
Yeah.
So not what you would expect.
Into a
movie that was advertised as just 2 hours of shirtless Brad Pitt in Montana.
Yeah. It was fun movie though.
Last year we had Hope Floats, Say Anything, Game Night, and Saving Silverman.
Yeah,
because that's the kinds of things our wives are.
That's
into.
What they wanted to watch.
And what we're gonna,
yeah, yes, go ahead. What are we kicking off Wives' Choice with? It's your week, so what is your wife chosen for us to watch?
So my wife,
Borat.
We chose, and as you and I debated,
It's Wives' Choice. There's no Wives' Choice.
Well, Patreon subscriber Melissa L. was aware, she was in on it,
that
we were ending Rhyming Titles Month with Kill Bill Volume 1. And so we're like, hey, why don't we start Wives' Choice Month with Kill Bill Volume 2?
Yeah.
So we're going to flow right from one into the next, kick off Wives' Choice Month with 2004's Kill Bill Volume 2.
You just want to do it right now? No.
We got some other fun stuff, really wide variety of movies.
Yeah, very much so. Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to watch all four. Two I've seen in their entirety, two I have not.
Mm-hmm.
The last 2 weeks I've not seen in their entirety.
I was not aware that you didn't see week three in its entirety.
No.
The last one I have also never seen.
And so my wife is very excited for that one. She mentioned that one a couple of times, but every time Wives' Choice Month shows up, she forgets about it. Mm. I actually had that title down in a future month.
Uh-huh.
And when she was really struggling to find a second choice, I mentioned, you had mentioned this before. She goes, yes, that's what I want to watch. I'm like, okay.
Okay,
I've seen enough of it to know what's going on. It's not a bad film, you know. Like from parts I've seen of it, I think it gets kind of a sappier thing, but there's more to it than that. It's a fun movie, so
Very delicious sounding movie.
Yeah, not a Saving Silverman type of fun movie. No, I mean,
what is?
Right. But it's still a fun movie.
All right. So, yeah, right. We will be back next week, kicking off Wives Choice Month with Kill Bill Volume 2.
All right. That's good, because when I saw that on the docket, I was like, good, because, you know, you watch part one, you kind of then want to watch part two. And so it's like, this just flowed really nice for us. So it'll be, thank you. Patreon subscriber Melissa L.
Tip of the cap to Patreon subscriber Melissa L.
Yeah. So we will be back next week, social media wise. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Link to Patreon is down below in case you want to join and have your name shouted through speakers worldwide.
Hey!
As we have listeners all over the globe.
All over the Northern Illinois area. Right. Well, and the far northwestern Indiana area.
That too. So, but yeah, so we will be back next week to cover Kill Bill Volume 2 to kick off the third annual Wives Choice Month. There's been more Wives Choice Months than there have been World Wars.
Well, it's more successful.
It just shows you.
I think people like it more.
It shows you love is stronger than
war. It is. Love trumps war.
That's right. So, all right. Well, you guys have a good rest of your week, and we'll catch you next week with Kill Bill Volume 2.